You know, with two dogs, a kid, and life just constantly happening in our house, I feel like I'm always cleaning something. I've tried a ton of products over the years, but Bullshot Carpet has honestly become one of those things I keep reaching for because it actually works fast. I've used it on rugs and upholstery, even after coffee spills and muddy shoes. I love that it dries quickly and doesn't leave a sticky residue behind. It makes cleaning just feel like less of a project. And Bullshot isn't just for carpets. There's a whole line of professional strength foaming cleaners for the messes life throws at you. There's Bullshot Pet for pet stains and odors, Bullshot Degreaser for kitchen grease, and Bullshot Barbecue for grills and grates. No matter the mess, Bullshot handles it. Just shake, point, and spray. Now, for a limited time, get up to 20% off Bullshot and free shipping when you text BULL to 64000. That's BULL to 64000 for up to 20% off and free shipping. That's BULL to 64000. Message and data rates may apply.
The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
We begin with the National Ambulance Service engaging in a strike today in this dispute over pay. The HSE is warning of significant disruption to ambulance services. Pickets are at ambulance bases around the country as part of the action, which started at 8 o'clock this morning. It'll last for 24 hours. Well, I'm joined now by Dr. Brendan O'Shea, who's Assistant Professor in Medicine at Trinity College Dublin. Good morning to you, Brendan. Good morning, Brendan. Can you hear me?
Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. Good to have you with us, Brendan. From your point of view, are there immediate patient safety risks when something like this happens?
We have to consider that there would be. This is an essential service and is catering to time-sensitive medical conditions that evolve in the community. So in theory, there absolutely is a concern. I'm looking at this as from the perspective of a general practitioner. There are large numbers of vulnerable people, particularly older, complex people, and this is a cause of significant concern for them, as well as a real and material risk. Also looking at it from the perspective of a GP out of ours cooperative. I'm the medical director at KDOC. To date, we haven't noticed any impact, but today, again, there's an uncertainty with respect to what's going to happen later on during the day.
And also, I mean, there may not be an official, we might see officially that there is an impact here, but it is likely, isn't it, to impact people's behaviour when they know that there is a strike on and they're considering whether they will seek medical help or not.
The majority of people are very effective at understanding whether they're seriously ill or sick or not. There's a smaller minority of people who are vulnerable, people with significant mental health issues, and again, complex frail elderly, especially living alone. And for them, it is more difficult. Increasingly, numbers of people in the community have blood pressure cuffs. They have pulse oximetry at home. They've got better self-knowledge regarding managing their medical conditions. And all of this adds certainty. But we are not in a really great situation with this today. It's really unfortunate that this has been allowed to develop. I have no doubt, based on my understanding of the IR process within the HSE, that this has been simmering probably for years. So it is really, really quite frustrating and a cause of concern that people are on pickets and that the strike action going on is most unfortunate.
Well, from what we see this morning, it seems it's been going on since 2020 when it was first before the Workplace Relations Commission. And all of us, I think, would have imagined that it would have been solved and sorted before it got to this point.
Well, the taxpayer pays an awful lot of money to run the HSE. You can look at some big ticket items. We have 28 acute hospitals. The majority of them still run their administration on paper. It's 2026, for God's sake. We look at the leak and the hemorrhage of young qualified medics who will not work in a system that they find to be impossible in terms of training, in terms of basic, HR issues and HR skills. And what's happening today is essentially a failure at a HR level.
Well, just on that broader point, we were speaking last week about this proposal, which is doing the rounds in government, that students who finish their medical degrees would be compelled to stay here. They would be told that they will get a break on their student loans, or they'd get a bursary in order to have them stay working in Ireland after they qualify. Would you support something like that?
Well, that's a very different big can of worms from this morning's headline in relation to the ambulance service. But that, to me, sounds like a knee-jerk politician response. And again, if you compare the manner in which junior hospital doctors are treated in Australia, for example, in North America, in even in the UK, there's a huge difference. It's extremely difficult as a young hospital doctor to plan a professional life and a personal life in this country as you work through your late 20s and early 30s, working ridiculously long hours on training programs which have them travelling all over the country at every 6 month intervals, grappling with a housing crisis and a HR function, which when you drill into the detail, these young people typically can't plan their holidays, for example. They can't obtain their study leave with certainty. Many of them are on backwater jobs that are leading to no career progression. So I think our the politicians deciding that they will compel them to work indentured is only going to hasten and worsen a situation that's already arguably, well, it's important to keep the tone of this interview polite.
Well, listen, I've distracted us both now from the issue at hand, but I was interested to get your view on that topic. Coming back to what's happening with the ambulance service, I mean, we see that if this isn't sorted out, there'll be a 48-hour stoppage on the 19th of May, 72-hour stoppage on the 26th of May. If this doesn't have an impact today, it certainly will as the month goes on.
Well, we're bracing ourselves. We're depending on the good sense and the kindness of the public. And again, for anybody out there listening who particularly knows an individual who has significant mental health issues or a complex frail elderly person, just be aware and be available to them, okay, and to help out. Let's just be practical about it. This is going to get sorted out sooner or later. I hope the HSE have the ability to get it sorted out sooner.
Mm-hmm. And just in terms of how GPs manage this now, I mean, there are implications, I would imagine, for what you do when you feel somebody needs the help of an ambulance to get them to a hospital.
Well, in Ireland, we still have reasonably good continuity of care at the practice level. In most practices, we know our patients well, and it's easier for us to make a quick, rapid determination whether there's a serious acute issue going on or not. The extent to which this continuity of care is generally available, it's not available in every practice, but in most practices, that's still the case. And we will be relying on that and on the good sense and the goodwill of people to make good decisions. It's one of the core skills of general practice to differentiate between minor and major illness, between minor illnesses and emergencies. And we'll certainly be put to the pin of our collar in during the next 24 hours. And hopefully this will get sorted.
Brenna, does this point to additional or wider pressures across the emergency care system here in Ireland?
I think we understand that the population is growing. We understand that the growth in population is almost certainly outpacing the services that are available. And this is very evident both in GP cooperatives and in emergency departments. In GP cooperatives and emergency departments, these are services that are established for the treatment of acute, urgent issues. But people, an increasing proportion of people, are having to use emergency departments and GP cooperatives as surrogate GP services. Mm-hmm. They are not surrogate GP services. There is no continuity of care worth talking about in either GP cooperatives or casualty departments. Every time you go in, you're seen by a different physician. So this is what we're seeing at a population level. So answering your important question, yes, there is a mismatch between capacity and the actual healthcare needs of a growing population.
Yeah.
Well,
I have a paramedic in touch with us here who says, I'm sad to tell you, many 999 calls are not what would generally be regarded as emergencies. People call because they can't get a GP appointment on the day that they want. People call with alcohol, substance addiction issues. People call out of loneliness and a need for social care.
I rest my case, and I mean, we're both reading from the same page here. At the Irish College of General Practitioners has engaged with the HSE, and we have significantly increased the intake of trainees into the National GP Training Programme. But the population is literally exploding in demographic terms. Mm-hmm. And people coming into the country often have very significant health needs. They have difficulties in engaging at the primary care level, and the spillover goes into the acute care sector, including GP cooperatives and emergency departments.
Thank you very much for joining us. That is Brendan O'Shea, Assistant Professor in Public Health and Primary Care at Trinity College, and also a GP, as he says himself. Now, we move to what's happening right now in London, because Keir Starmer is gearing up to face his cabinet soon in this hour, fighting to stay on as Prime Minister. At least 74 Labour MPs have now urged him to resign immediately or draw up a timetable to do so. Pressure has been building on Keir Starmer after Labour's disastrous performance in last week's local elections. He has said he won't walk away, but will that change in the coming minutes and hours? Well, I'm joined on the line by Ian Dale, LBC presenter, and also Mark Paul, London correspondent with the Irish Times. Ian Dale is with us, watching and waiting, no doubt. Ian, this is a crucial hour, isn't it?
Well, it is. I've been watching all of the different cabinet ministers walk into number 10 Downing Street, all being shouted at by the waiting media. Is he going to resign? And the truth is, none of us know. I think it is possible. It's even likely. We've had the Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, a key ally of his, doing the morning media round. And he's had a very hangdog expression. He wasn't sort of taking the fight to the media. He was very reflective. And it seems to me all the mood music is that Keir Starmer is going to set out a timetable for his departure. He's not going to go, if he does resign, he's not going to go immediately because there isn't a ready successor. So I suspect he will stay in office for several months while the Labour Party has a leadership election.
And how will that look? That's going to be very messy, isn't it?
Well, if you look at various changes of Prime Minister over the past 10 years, on one occasion, there was a coronation where there wasn't a leadership election. The Conservative Party just decided that they wouldn't have one. And Rishi Sunak emerged as that as a successor to Liz Truss. I don't think that's going to happen here. The Labour Party normally take about 3 months to run a leadership election, which in government terms is a huge amount of time. Mm-hmm. And the problem they've got is that the financial markets are already in a state of flux, and our borrowing levels, the bond yields, are higher at the moment than they were when Liz Truss's mini-budget happened. Now, if they get the impression that there's going to be political instability over the next few months, which inevitably there will be, those bond markets are going to go crackers, which means that the cost of government borrowing goes up. It means that the cost of borrowing for individuals with mortgages, that goes up. Inflation goes up. And any growth agenda is out of the window. So this is a very, very difficult time.
The bond markets, though, are they reacting to the possibility that Labour may install a more left-leaning leader, Ian? Is that at play here too?
Yes, I think that is partly what's going on. And it is very possible that Labour do that. I mean, Labour is, in theory, a left of centre party, and two of the main candidates for the succession, Angela Rayner and Andy Burnham, although he's not an MP at the moment, so that's another fly in the ointment. If either of them took over, I think most people expect a more left-wing economic policy. Mm-hmm. Ed Miliband, who led the Labour Party for 5 years between 2010 and 2015, he is seen as the kingmaker, and he wants to be Chancellor of the Exchequer. Well, he will be a much more left-wing Chancellor of the Exchequer than Rachel Reeves has been.
Ian, stay with us. I want to bring in Mark Paul at this point. Mark, do you think that Keir Starmer's chances of staying on after this cabinet meeting are as dismal as Ian predicts?
I think it's very, very difficult for a cabinet, for a prime minister to stay on, and not just with the amount of MPs who have called for him to go. I mean, that number alone, he could probably survive. But it's the fact that split in his cabinet. I mean, I was there yesterday at his great big reset speech in Waterloo in the Coyne Street Neighbourhood Centre, which was the speech that was billed as his fight back, the speech where he was going to convince all of these wavering MPs that he really was the man to lead Labour ahead. But I think within about 5 or 10 minutes of it starting, everybody in the room knew that this was going to fall flat, and fall flat is what happened indeed. And it was, you know, the calls for him to go among certain MPs had already started before that speech. Most of those early MPs were supporters and backers of Andy Burnham, and that was a kind of a coordinated wave, and they used coordinated language. language. Most of them said something like they wanted an orderly transition to a new leader. That is code for don't have a leadership contest too soon, because we want our man Andy Byrne to be in it. After the speech and later into yesterday afternoon, acolytes and his outriders come into view.
Mm-hmm. Just interested listening to Ian outline the runners and riders there. Andy Burnham, Angela Rayner, Ed Miliband, who is the kingmaker. What about Wes Streeting, though, Mark? How are people rating him and his chances of being the next leader of the Labour Party?
Depends on how quickly a leadership contest is held. Wes Streeting has been prepared for this for months and months and months. His allies, he's had a plan in place for months. For months, he's been fending off accusations from Number 10 that he was plotting. But he was ready for this moment. Wes Streeting, huge support amongst the Labourship membership in the way that, in the Labour Party membership, in the way that Andy Byrne would have or Angela Rayner would have. Wes Streeting could also be sure that if he goes for it, if he tries to force an early leadership contest and force a swift timetable, that somebody from the soft left of the party will challenge him if Burnham is not there to do so. But I think Angela Rayner at the moment, for the moment, she has moved into the Burnham camp, and that is clear. And then she's made several calls for Burnham to be allowed to run in a by-election to come back. But, you know, if a contest is held before Burnham is eligible to take part, well, then you wouldn't rule Angela Rayner for standing out, or somebody else from the soft left. I wouldn't even rule out Ed Miliband, even though he keeps saying that he doesn't want it. But somebody from the soft left of the party will challenge Streeting, I think, if he goes without Andy Burnham in the race.
Ian, what do you think about that theory?
I think it all depends on the timing. That Andy Burnham has a real problem now, because even if today a Manchester MP or an MP in the Northwest decided to resign their seat to allow him to then stand, that would be the mother of all by-election campaigns, because Reform UK are on the march in the Northwest, and they would do everything they could to beat Andy Burnham, and they might well succeed. But a by-election wouldn't be held until, say, the middle of June. So by that time, nominations could have closed, and Andy Burnham's campaign could have been scuppered right from the beginning. Now, I suspect they will find a way around this, but this is not certain. I'm not an expert on the Labour Party rule book, and rules can be bent, and then Labour Party have shown that they've done that in the past. So who knows? Wes Streeting's best chance is if there is a very quick leadership contest. I think a lot of Labour people will hope for some sort of coronation. That's not going to happen. Wes Streeting is seen as a Blairite on the right of the Labour Party, and there'll be a lot of enemies that will try and stop him. Angela Rayner has a huge problem in that her tax affairs still haven't been sorted out. So I can't see how she can run until HMRC, His Majesty's Revenue and Customs, until they have cleared her tax affairs and she's repaid what she owes. Because, I mean, if she did run and win without that having done, and then they do come down on her like a ton of bricks, well, then she would have to go as well. And we're in this sort of doom loop of leadership crises yet again in this country.
All right. And they're still arriving there as we speak. And I see in the last few minutes there has been a resignation of a government undersecretary, Miatta Fanbulla, which is the latest news to emerge from Downing Street. We'll keep a close eye on that. But for now, Ian Dale from LBC and Mark Paul from the Irish Times, thank you both for being with us.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.